This show is really about everything. It might look the same, like formats, everything as the last show, but personally, I feel like it opened up so many directions.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.
Today's guest is the painter Guy Janai. Welcome, Guy.
Thank you.
Guy, tell me, how did you come to art? Or when did art come to you?
Art always came to me. I didn't come from a house that had any kind of art in it or a family that had any art in it, but the act of creativity was always with me. Even in kindergarten, it was, you know, clay things, making objects, drawing. I just never stopped. The hardest thing with art coming to you is to kind of sustain it, to keep it going. I think that was harder to keep making art than to find art.
But I mean, it's one thing to do creative things as a child or a teenager, but how did the profession of becoming an artist occur to you? And like, when did you have any role model in your surrounding?
The becoming like a professional, quote unquote, professional artist was really difficult. I studied in the States, and basically in 4 years, I transferred 3 times because I kind of hated all structures and all colleges. So I went to 1 year of Parsons, 1 year of the New York Studio School, and then I finished my degree in Amherst, which is 2 hours west of Boston. I had a few teachers who were kind of role models from the New York Studio School. So I think really it took me after I finished college to just only make art, to wake up and have nothing else. It took me like 9 years after. Maybe I think I made every possible mistake that is possible in like the career mode of things. I never stopped making art, but until I could only sustain a studio life and only do that, I think it was like 28, 29.
And how did you find your language and your unique style?
Only by working. It wasn't like an intellectual thing that I thought through. I mean, I think in the beginning, I always had to like justify painting and justify my ideas. And I read a lot. I used to love Jörg Heisel, the writer. I used to really like, Susan Sontag. And at one point, I said, you know what? I'm just going to do what I want to do. So everything, like, it's just through the process of painting that the language came about. And hopefully it keeps changing, you know? Like, it keeps changing and growing and taking turns. You see some artists who are, like, 50, 60 years do the same thing. I have no idea how they do that.
But it was clearly always painting, yeah?
Yeah.
Or you experimented in all sorts of
things? I did experiment in sculptures, a few sculptures, and then I realized they were just like 3D paintings.
Okay. So you're born and raised in Tel Aviv, Israel?
In Haifa.
In Haifa, okay.
Yeah, which is about an hour and a half north.
And then you started to study art in Israel, or you left?
No, I left with my family. We moved when I was 7.
Okay.
To the Boston area. And then I came back to Tel Aviv after my degree. I was 22.
Oh, what made you come back?
I didn't like New York anymore. And my parents were in Boston, and I did not want to go to where my parents were.
Yeah.
So I kind of, and I was always visiting Tel Aviv. So I went back there. Maybe like, again, maybe career-wise, it was the stupidest thing I could ever have done in my life.
Because you know? You're so remote, no?
Yeah.
And there's hardly an art scene, no?
Yeah, and it's only, in the past 15 years, it's only gotten smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah, but you just went home, I guess, right? Because this is where you come from.
I just went home and I liked it. And like, I got a job there and started building a life. I mean, I love Tel Aviv. I really like it.
So, when you said you came to your style, and you know, because you have a very unique color palette, which I think is very almost like Californian, maybe.
Yeah.
So how did you come to that? What I really like with your work, I mean, you work mainly figurative, but you are kind of constructing the paintings. You have that specific brush stroke, and you're building it. You know, it's almost like a brick. They appear as if they were like constructed.
Yeah.
And then what I really like a lot is often you have these blends, like parts of the painting are with a certain overlay of a block almost. And how you said you were working, but how, I mean, it's not suddenly there. Like where?
No. Strangely, I started like as an abstract painter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like was really into like Bryce Marden and people like that, and of course Cy Twombly. And I would never really paint figurative. So somehow I just wanted to make these things, especially around 2011, 2012. I had like my first big show in Tel Aviv. And, but you know, I wanted to paint the figures like I'd never seen a body anymore, like I'd never seen a face anymore. Like I'd, you know, I wanted to treat it like completely abstract. Regarding the colors, it's really strange to me that if you look out the window in Tel Aviv or Haifa or anywhere, or now Marseille, it's kind of the same colors as, you know, the California colors. Somehow, a lot of Israeli painters like use so many browns, and it's so strange to me. It's like they're living in like Northern Holland. But if you just look around, it's kind of, those are the colors I see around me. It's not foreign, you know, it's very, I see it as very local in the nice sense of the word. It's not like a conscious decision. I mean, it is a conscious, maybe it's a subconscious decision. It just makes a lot of sense to mix these colors when I'm painting. It feels right. It feels natural. It's not forced or it's not so intellectual.
So you mean these, I mean, it's a lot of contrast, I would say, but then I find interesting is it seems very controlled on one side, but then very deconstructed, almost like the details fall apart and then they're abstract in the detail.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better.
Yeah.
Yeah, you articulated it perfectly, more than I could have.
And how, because what I find so interesting is that you are able to transform a very powerful aura by sort of, I don't know, it's like a nuance of an atmosphere which is transferred. How do you pick the motifs? Because some are from movies, some are, I don't know, I guess just what you see or photographs your own take. How do you come to these motives?
I think like my job, it feels like almost more than the painter is like an editor, because that's the big thing is what do you paint or what do I paint? You know, we as artists today, we have so much freedom to choose our subject matter. I think that, you know, I store thousands and thousands of images, and when I'm like, on traveling, I just all throughout the plane when I'm traveling, I just look at images again and again and again, and what would make an amazing painting. Again, first, it has to be this like emotional reaction, just something that takes my breath away, something that I find like beautiful, you know. Everyone uses this word abject now, like in New York, and I'm the exact opposite of the abject. I'm kind of into like order. This kind of harmony now, this kind of
escapism.
Sense of beauty. No, it's not escapism. I think it's reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this structure here has such an order. It sits so well. I don't think it's escapism. I think it's like nature, you know?
But also the trivial beauty in trivial life. I mean, it's like when we look at where you studied and, you know, to paint a still life of a flower bouquet, also as a Caucasian male, I guess.
Yeah.
It's kind of bold on a way too, no?
I don't think people should be judged on decisions they didn't make. So I didn't choose to be a Caucasian male. I was just born that way. I didn't have like a choice. I didn't choose my nationality or my religion or my color. So I think to paint flowers is kind of like radical. People in my whole town, they don't really accept it so much. They do kind of think it's escapism, but it's just what's like around me and what, you know, a whole brings these beautiful flowers home, and like, I love it, you know?
Like, for example, there's this centerpiece on the altar wall, like where the exhibition is in a former church, and on the highest altar wall on the backside of the exhibition, there's one painting, a centerpiece, which is a very sort of interesting landscape. And I think what's so interesting about your work, it's sort of simplified on how the painting is structured. You know, you have the land, the sea, and the the mountains in the back, so almost like three-stripe, typical landscape structure of a painting. But then there are these people, and they are more like bypassers, more. They're not really in the center, but somehow you unfold an energy between these characters, which is sort of not so easy to describe. How do you know when you... It transports an atmosphere and energy. How do you know that this will work out with that motive on such a scale? Because it's a big painting. It takes you a lot of time. Like, do you work on... You do drawings, or how do you create
I didn't know it would work out. So you got to take a risk. Listen, for that back wall, I mean, it was specifically done for this show and for this context and for that and for the gallery upstairs. So it's 180 by 240 centimeters. So it's the biggest work in the show. It's kind of a thing that I always wanted to paint. I mean, it's like, really, it's so stupid. You know, it's like people walking in the grass near a lake with mountains. It's like this, if you think about it for a painting, it's not so smart. It's kind of stupid. There was this like one painting I did a year ago of like this one woman facing like a lake with her back. And I wasn't sure if I liked it. And like, although my wife, she didn't really like it. And then I showed it in South Korea and people like loved it. And I was like, wow, that's kind of interesting. So then I thought I want to do like more people. I had no idea that it would work, you know. I knew that the scale would be perfect, like 180 240, and it's not like it's a Venetian scale, and so like I love these like golden mean sizes.
And did you experience that moment with these people?
Or? No, not at all.
So where is this coming from?
It's like it's synthetic, it's plasticized, it's a bunch of things put together. The main, like the mountain, comes from Lake Annecy.
Mm-hmm.
In France. I've never been there. I just kind of combined images there. Yeah, it's like totally synthetic.
So, but you create somehow it's in a feeling which you have, or I don't know, maybe I'm only projecting it into it.
I just wanted like people that you see their back in front of a lake, in front of like a body of water. I don't know, there's something like mountains, water, land, people.
But they have a certain, I think the work has a certain nostalgia or, or you know, like a certain feel of memory of our own life, which we think back of when we were younger. Or, you know, it's also this woman who's smoking.
Chantal Ackerman, yeah.
Yeah, so, but how important is that for the viewer to know? Not really, no?
That is Chantal Ackerman?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of important.
Is this in the title then?
She's just called Chantal.
Yeah.
I didn't want to make it so obvious. I came back to her. She's a Belgian director. Again, she's like a Belgian lesbian Jewish director, but she hated those terms as well. She would never participate in like queer film festivals, would never participate in Jewish film festivals. She just made her movies. She did come to Tel Aviv a few times to lecture at the Betzalel, the second degree program. And I did see her around and I just started seeing her movies again. And I thought they were so amazing. She committed suicide, very, very tragic and sad. And I thought she was so beautiful when she was young. And like, it's more like the kind of like a teenager, like a little kid. Like, I like her, I'm going to paint her. And that's actually one of my favorite works in the show, the Chantal Ackerman. Like that and the office painting are my two.
So in a way, you're like a movie director too, but the movie is in the painting, no?
Yeah, like an editor, more like a film editor.
Yeah, because you create this, you know, it's like you see a movie and it's the narrative is one thing, but the feeling it creates or the life you live through while you...
Yeah,
that's...
Yeah, I love to live through movies. I love to live through movies.
And also the Chantal Ackerman portrait, it has again this blend or this like block on the ground. Where did you come to this? That you sort of framed these pictures with your unique Gayanai?
It just makes so much sense. A lot of the time, it's like, you know, when you have a record player and you need to, if you don't put that little cable in, you don't ground it, everything has this like this strange buzzing noise. I feel like it just like kind of grounds the painting. You can enter the painting. Also, it feels fresh. You know, it feels very fresh.
And it comes first or last?
There's no system.
Okay.
If I do a big painting, I know I'm going to do it. I put it first.
So you mentioned this office painting.
Yeah, I think it's my favorite painting in the show. It was so hard. Oh my God, this painting. I've never worked on that painting so long.
And interesting is the painting I mentioned first of that landscape.
Yeah.
That appears in that office painting as well, right?
I mean, there's some posters of the landscapes.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
Is it this one? Because
no.
It has the same sort of...
Maybe it is. This is taken from a Romel film. In English, it's called Boyfriends and Girlfriends. In French, it's like L'ami de mon ami. It's like two women and two men, and they're a couple, and then they both switch partners in the end. And it's just like I saw her office. I mean, it's like a one-second frame. When you see where she works in this kind of like new, I mean, now it would be so ugly if you come see it, but it was a kind of like these new periphery suburban areas outside of Paris. They thought it was like this new kind of this new amazing world. Yeah, I saw it and I knew I was like, oh my God, I have to paint it. And it was really, I mean, maybe I shouldn't say it. It was actually, I did it in one day. It was very easy.
So sometimes you have to sort of fight with the paintings and sometimes they go easier?
Yeah. This was, I just had to mix so much and clean them. It's like every little.
But how much is there, how much is a painting similar to the.
This one is pretty similar.
To the second you saw in that film.
This one is pretty similar. I mean, I did a screenshot and I was working from like details of this. This one is really similar. Anyone can find that frame if you look hard enough.
Yeah, but there's also a trillion other frames to be found, huh? So it's very much about the...
Yeah.
But again, I would say you try to carry that feeling you had in that moment into a painting.
Yeah. You know, when like after like in the late 90s, you know, I always said that I like hated the 80s. And now I'm going back to this. You know, I grew up in the 80s. I'm going, now this aesthetic really... really appeals to me, and it's also very strange. Like the boxiness, everything was a little more boxy. Things were less round. Also cars.
Yeah, but that's, I think, also interesting about your work, that it's quite timeless. You know, I mean, it's clearly the past, but it could be the 60s or 70s or 80s. And tell me the mix of motifs. That's quite essential for exhibition too, no? To have the variety of genres in painting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I remember when I came to kind of give the walkthrough of the show that we did 2 years ago downstairs, and the first thing I said to everyone here at the gallery, I said, this show is about nothing. And then I think about this show, and I think this show is about everything.
Uh-huh.
This show is really about everything. It might look the same, like formats, everything, as the last show, but personally, I feel like it opened up so many directions. I mean, I think now, let's say, if I want, I could do a show of 20 portraits. I can do a show of 20 flowers. I can do a show of 20 lakes. I can do a show of 20 interiors. You know, it's like, I've never felt so open that I can, the freedom to go in so many directions. I mean, just because of the working situation, I was flying back and forth between France and Israel. And, you know, I was very scared that I wouldn't be able to ship things. So, in a way, it was like a totally like incoherent show. Like content-wise, it doesn't really make sense, but it somehow works. I think it works together.
I mean, how did the war and the whole climate influence you? Because you were working in Tel Aviv and in Marseille, and of course, it's a different mindset. I don't know, your family, even if you're in Marseille, you have family in Israel. Did that influence you?
Yeah. It's been the hardest 8-9 months, and this was the hardest show to make in my life. I won't lie. Even when things are perfect over there, I feel like I have one arm tied behind my back as far as people who are in Europe or in the States. And here I felt, you know, it was just focusing and sustaining, and it's hard to articulate, but it was a very difficult very difficult time.
But it's still not escapism to go into the work and to...
Because
that's what I find interesting about maybe this show in comparison to the other. You paint a little the trivial too. You know, you paint... I mean, it is a landscape and it is a cityscape and you have these still lives.
Absolutely, yeah.
But at the same time, they are, you know, not artificially perfect. They are like from life.
Nothing would be easier than to work directly from current situations. Nothing would be easier. I think it's much harder at these things when you're bombarded by external, I don't know what it's called, external situations, difficult external situations, to look, to continue to look inside, to look back, to look in the future. You know, don't forget that Bunal, Matisse, Picasso, they work through the most like horrific wars, and mainly like 90% you don't see it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Even like in the Renaissance, there was like a 30-year war. Like, you know, mainly history has been very, very bloody. I think usually the work that directly engages in that, I don't think it interests me less. And I think it doesn't stand the test of time.
It's interesting that you mentioned the Renaissance, because there's one sort of untypical picture for you in the show, maybe very typical. It's a Renaissance painting you sort of interpreted, which is a bit unusual, because usually you paint like still life scenarios, landscapes, and then pictures within the picture. So what is it about this painting?
This is an image that I've just been looking at really for 20 years. It's a Venetian painting. When I was like young, I was obsessed with a Venetian painting with Titian. He would finish the paintings with his fingers, you know. I've just been looking at this painting. He's not just a well-known painter, Palma Vecchio. It was kind of like everything that I've been painting. It's like this blonde woman, and she's holding flowers, and she's got like her fingers. I mean, the thing with her fingers is it's very like contemporary. People do that all the time. I just thought it was so beautiful, and that one nipple coming out. So
it was a scandalous painting at the time.
Yeah,
no?
It's completely scandalous. It's so sexual. The flowers, the nipple, the. And I just thought it's so contemporary, and so I just wanted to just transcribe it, you know. I'm not like super, super gung-ho on like being original.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't even care about that. I just care about making good work, and I think that if I do it honestly, with integrity, it's like I make it mine completely.
Yeah.
And that painting, I was so free. If you look like the brushstroke is not so horizontal and vertical. I just, you know, sometimes I went like that, and... Yeah, that painting, I had so much fun making that. Like, the office was so difficult in that painting. Oh, it was so fun to make. Like,
and then again, how would you describe these blocks over the picture? Also, she has like this sort of Gaia eye stamp underneath. How
that was like kind of just compositionally, like the painting. You know, I have the sizes that I work in, so that's like the 80x60 size. I mean, all the paintings are, for the past few years, are kind of like, you know, 40 by 30, 80 by 60, 150 by 120, 150 by 180. So they're kind of these standard sizes, you know, just so that the show will have a sense of like...
dynamic.
You know, yeah, order, you know, but like, so it's not like 1,000 sizes in the show. There's like 4 or 5 sizes. So I wanted to do it in that size. And then I was like, oh, there's some space left over. So I was like, let's ground it. It's a very kind of like a formalist decision in many ways.
Yeah.
But then it really works. It really works with the image.
And then there's for the first time, I think you painted your wife, who's on a also quite trivial scene.
Yeah.
You on the grass, but she seems to be on the way up or something like this.
Yeah, that was a picnic we did in like the mountains of Jerusalem. It was a really nice day, and because I've been painting like other women, I think like a lot of her friends were like, why don't you paint a wall? They were starting to get mad at me, you know? But it's really hard for me to paint people I know, especially people that I'm very close to. It's really, really hard. But, you know, she's wearing a shirt that says Dada on it that she designed. And I thought that t-shirt was really cool. And I thought the image, all of a sudden I found it. I refound it again. And it was so poetic. And it was like a great kind of picnic, great day. And my daughter was there. And I was like, okay, I'm going to paint this like, I don't know if she's liked it.
How heavy is it for you to make this decision?
It was really hard. To paint her was really hard. Like, let's say like to paint other people, like to paint family, I could never do it.
No, but for example, this other one, there's this, it's a street scenario and there's a woman walking up the street.
Yeah, that painting was also so hard.
And it's such an interesting motif because it's super trivial too.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it unfolds this energy and you wonder on what journey she is. But then it's all, you know, because it's really, I mean, it's a beautiful painting, but it's not really a beautiful environment.
No. It's a diptych that's kind of a diptych with the office painting. It's like external, internal. That's like the office and then that kind of, that 80s architecture, which was so cool then, and it looks so horrible now. It looks like very dead now, but back then it was considered very alive.
Yeah, it was like an utopistic concept of bringing the urban city mixing with nature, and then they realized it's not...
Like all this kind of blocky and like let's put green colors, like a very artificial green painted and...
But it's not a specific place, it's a specific atmosphere or feeling.
With those buildings, those kind of... It's kind of like the new France, what they tried to do. I mean, they also like in Haifa is exactly the same kind of, just these kind of like blocks.
No, but here also around the gallery too, you know, because everything was bombed flat.
Yeah.
And then they tried to have this sort of...
Utopia.
Yeah, like a nature urbanism, you know, to have the countryside mixed with the building blocks and then...
A utopia. It didn't work in the long term, I mean...
But where's this motive coming from?
This is coming from like an area of France. Again, the same thing of outside of Paris.
But not a movie.
This is from a movie. This is from the same movie as The Office Painting.
Oh, the same. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Boyfriends and Girlfriends.
Yeah.
Again, it's like a one milliframe.
Yeah. And the kitchen?
It's called iPad on Transavia. I was flying back home on these low-cost planes. I did a painting of that 4 years ago with two figures inside, like kind of like this romantic painting. And then I realized I was much more into the interior. So it was just like on my iPad. And then when you watch these, you know, I download the movies from Mubi and all these apps. You can't do screenshots. You know, like they don't let you. If you do a screenshot, it comes out just dark, just like nothing. So it's like a picture that I took of my iPhone, on my iPhone, of the iPad in the plane. That painting came really quick, actually. And I like that painting. It's fresh, it's nice, it's old, it's new, it's this interior, there's that window I love.
But it's interesting, a lot of your work have these connection between inside and outside. Like you are in a room and then you look into the landscape, or you have the feeling that even the view on the landscape is as if someone would look out of the window.
Yeah.
What is this interior, exterior?
It's so nice, isn't it? I don't know. I like it. It's so nice to be in a room. And,
but I mean, that's painting too, right?
Yeah,
to bring
it's painting.
The inner picture outside
it's
on
painting.
The canvas.
I'm really into like the history of painting, the history of art. It's something I studied a lot, something I keep on studying.
And then this style you developed, you know, of this like...
Yeah,
these like
lines,
almost like a plaster lines build up. How did you come to that? I mean, is this where you trained as an artist, or is that because maybe it's even a little unorthodox to work like this? No,
I think so. I mean, I was doing one painting in 2011. It was just like a big triangle, and I just did all these stripes. And then I was like, oh, I kind of like that, these stripes. And it was a totally abstract painting. And then I thought, it's like, what if I make a painting just of these stripes? And then I realized that like the viewer's brain kind of like the viewer can understand if the stripe is nothing, if it's just like a line that doesn't refer to anything, and that the viewer can also understand if the stripe represents like a book or part of something else, or if there's a few of these that it can build into something that represents something. So I now I use only like flat brushes,
mm-hmm.
and it's really simple. It's not so planned. It's very kind of intuitive, like where I start. So it's just really like flat brushes, oil paint. I mix like a simple. It's really like very, very simple. It's not hiding behind too many things.
Yeah, but I find interesting how you transport the. I don't know, like when you paint female, that energy you transfer there.
Yeah, and sometimes you have these little white areas that are just left, like the ground of the canvas, you know, and especially in the portraits, I think it's really, that's something that kind of excites me.
But it's unusual, no? I mean, did you ever see that somewhere else?
No. It feels very natural to me, but I don't think I've seen that. Again, like I never painted people before the coronavirus. Like
mm-hmm.
I was very scared of people. Before that, everything was empty. And maybe I was like a little less social. And then in the corona, I started watching. There's a Louisiana museum. They have this YouTube channel.
Yeah, great
amazing,
one. Yeah.
So I saw this lecture. It was It was, what's his name? That Norwegian writer, Karl Ove...
Karl Knausgaard.
Yeah.
Karl Ove Knausgaard.
Yeah. So he's this Norwegian writer, and he curated a show of Munch at Louisiana, and he was talking with Peter Doig. And, you know, this the Karl Ove was, wow, incredible. Peter Doig didn't have much to say, but the way the light was shining, he's bald, the way it was shining on his head, it was just like pink area. And now, then, like, they had this microphone. I was like, I don't even like Peter Doig's painting. But then I'm like, oh, so that was the first portrait I did. I painted Peter Doig.
Oh, in that conversation?
Yeah, I just like kind of like, you know, I kind of cropped it and rescaled it. And I did a little portrait of him. And then I really liked it.
Okay, so I think it, again, it's really about capturing the feeling, atmosphere. And I mean, with Knausgaard too, no? The books are...
Yeah, I love this guy's writing.
You remain with this sort of heavy sorrow.
Yeah.
You read Hiob by Joseph Roth?
No.
Ah, it's a book which is carrying me through life. You know, it's like that's the story of Hiob in the Bible, but it's like Joseph Roth, the American author's
sort of tonight.
Interpretation. And it's super, I mean, this guy is like challenged by God and lived through one traumatic experience after the other, but remains sort of with a certain positive faith.
And this book has like been with you your whole life?
Yeah, I read it after I couldn't read because after my accident, I was like listening to audiobooks. And then because I was sort of locked in hospital and then after hospital at home. And then I read like the entire, or listened to, because there were like audiobooks you could mail order, and then they were sending cassettes. And then we received tons of these audiobooks, and I read the entire world literature, you know.
Wow.
All, I mean, trivial literature like Karl May, all of it.
Yeah.
But then also Josef Roth and Kafka and Süßkind and I don't know, you name it, all of it. The whole Thomas Mann.
Yeah.
And somehow this here, probably also because of my self-pityness and sort of finding a way how to turn this around and keep the hopes up, that Roth book was really stick to me. But anyway, this atmosphere between this couple, there's a painting of a couple, I think they're in a pool. And it's funny because in this case, suddenly your Gaia Nai pink block on the ground becomes a function, and it's like the corner of the pool. But I don't know, maybe it's not a pool. Who are these?
It's the sea.
Oh, it's the sea, okay.
It's the sea. It's this kind of, I mean, that's kind of a perverse painting.
It's a little creepy, no?
Yeah, it's a little, you know, but I don't care. I also like the painting Breast is very new. You know, last year in our Art Berlin Week, I gave you that painting with like the one breast I love.
With the girl unbuttons her shirt.
Yeah, I love that painting. It was the first time, and again, it's looking at the breast like no one's seen it, just like to kind of deconstruct.
But this almost like pixels, right?
Yeah, like pixels, but also mosaics.
Yeah,
like you can go way, way back. Those are like ta.
Yeah,
those mosaics. I love the mosaics, the Greek, Roman.
But so you want to create that uncanny feeling because he seems like an older guy.
It's uncomfortable. And he's an older guy. Yeah, it's like a very, you know, it's things that people are uncomfortable with and that people are scared to even talk about. You know, I love Balthus. I don't care what anybody says. I love Balthus. And now there's this new book of all his Polaroids. This is like a young girl and an older man. And obviously something, obviously the man wants something. And, you know, maybe the woman, I don't know. It's just like it interests me.
The energy, yeah.
Yeah, it's this tension, you know, between them.
But are these people reoccurring?
No, that's not. Never.
There's no narrative and there's not reoccurring. I mean, sometimes you have like heroes. Yeah. Shantana Ackermann, I wouldn't be surprised if you paint her again.
No, maybe I will paint her again.
And this girl who's reading the book.
Yeah, this is funny. This is really funny. One, I think like girls reading, it's the best subject. All these subjects are kind of classical subjects. You know, I'm not inventing subjects. I'm kind of going in the history of painting, of, you know, there's a Vermeer, the girl reading the letter.
And do you have to overcome a certain hesitation that you said like, oh, I shouldn't paint that painting?
No, I don't. Immediately, I know, I don't really care. But then people, you know, I show my friends like, you're crazy, you're going to
get cancer.
Yeah, but I don't think people really, I think it's more like a virtue signaling. That painting of the woman reading the book, it's this new film with Louis Garrel, and it's like about Godard. So that's like an actress who's supposed to be Anna Karina, but she's not. She's this new actress. And I even liked her more than Anna Karina. And just like reading, it's like a new movie trying to be an old movie, and about a girl reading a book. I thought it would make a great painting, this little painting of like, you know, with the red shirt and the book.
But interesting is there's no text on the book, but sometimes you did.
Yeah.
You use text in your paintings, not in this show.
That's also new. Yeah.
What's new?
The text.
But there's no text.
No, there's no text in this show. But like there was a show.
But in our last show, you had text elements, no?
There was a show in LA. It had a lot of text elements. But I also treated the text like I treat the breasts and like I treat the face, kind of like I try not to see it as text.
It becomes a painting.
Yeah, I really want to.
So it's not about the text; it's about the image.
It's about both.
Yeah,
it's about, you know, to have double, triple, four meanings. But the funny thing is, when I showed, you know, people those paintings, Americans hated those paintings, like hated. They're like, the gallerist was like, please don't send me text paintings.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well.
What did the text say?
One just said big, like Eric Romer.
Uh-huh.
You know, in yellow over like a still. It's just exciting. I thought it was so, it was also a little funny. One said the obscure object of my desire.
But how important is the reaction of the audience? Does it?
Think about it too much.
But in the next sort of round, then, because you mentioned that a couple of times now, that how people that you were surprised how the reaction was in Seoul, and then now that obviously you seem to be, you would have not anticipated that reaction, which then came, and I wonder, because again, inside outside, you know, the interior.
I don't want it to be too important. I want to like make my own paintings and. I mean, I'm going to continue to make more text paintings. I mean, yeah, it's sometimes things I think are like, you know, kind of like half power, then people really respond. I'm not going to lie. It makes me look at it again and reexamine like why it resonates so deeply with other people. I mean, if I painted it and I let it out of the studio, obviously I stand behind it. But yeah, sometimes I don't expect, like I have an idea of a painting that's going to be like, the centerpiece of the show or project, and sometimes it's something completely different. So,
and let me get back to this interior exterior again. So there's another picture. There's a door open, and obviously we are inside. The spectator is inside and looks through a door, and the handle is down, which is kind of weird because there's no one who could have put that handle down. And you look into a garden, and it's a bit maybe like this feeling.
Yeah,
you would associate with projecting a house and you're inside the house. How do you come to that? You sit inside, make a photo, or you watch a movie, see that scenario?
That's a photo. I like the door. It was kind of hard to paint also, but I don't know. I saw it and I knew I had to make it mine.
Uh-huh.
You know, I knew I had to take it and make it mine. Yeah, I love doors. I love windows. I love them inside. I love them from the outside. I love just the window. I love the window in an interior. It's endless. I mean, like now I can make 50 paintings of just doors like that. That's why this show is so, it's so cool to me because like I'm open to like now like 50 new directions.
Yeah, I mean this Renaissance painting or the Venetian school.
Yeah.
That's kind of rare. No, that's the first time you do something like this.
Yeah, it's first time I paint a hole. First time I do a Renaissance thing. Maybe first time I just do a door.
And it's interesting that you say that because now I totally understand the title of the show is Your World, Not Mine. So you are a spectator after all.
Yeah, I mean the title came from like my wife sent me a text message. We were texting and I said, my God, it feels like the whole world is like, is against us being together. And she replied, your world, not mine. And I thought it was so brilliant. She didn't understand. I thought it was so brilliant. And I understood it described the whole show. I mentioned like being an editor, but it's also kind of being really removed from these things. So it's this kind of like, I think it's a very healthy kind of jealousy and admiration. And just looking in awe of I'm not part of the Venetian Renaissance and I'm not part of these films. It was not, my childhood didn't look like that. My adulthood didn't look like that. All these things are kind of like, yeah, they're your world. They're not my world.
And you're a voyeur, like that's why the camera too?
Yeah, I think so. Just trying to look inside, trying to understand. There is a certain kind of an order there. It's not mine, but I want to make it mine, but it's not. Yeah. So it is looking from the outside.
Yeah, and you remain the spectator. But I mean, that's probably what drives you.
Yeah, totally drives me.
It makes you start the next painting and then the one after and the next one.
Yeah, I mean, I've already started painting again in both places.
Yeah, I hope you won't find it too soon so we can keep on enjoying
your
painting.
I'll never find it.
And so is there something you wouldn't paint?
I really wanted to paint cars. So it's like, you know, I thought it was like, you don't see many paintings of cars.
What's a boxy red car in the show?
Just this Fiat, this old Fiat with a thing. It's just a car, like.
But also from a movie?
No, that's from like an advertisement, like an old advertisement.
Yeah.
What I don't think I would paint like weapons.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't paint weapons.
Not even another Pulp Fiction sort of romanticized revolver from some melodrama.
Maybe like with like an old horse or something. You know, with an old horse, not too. Contemporary. I want to paint cameras, people with cameras.
Oh, yeah, there's also this couple. Who's this director? He has
a
camera.
Oh, yeah, that's also Rico Mir, yeah. So that opened up a whole thing with people with cameras. And I want to do someone with a Polaroid. And I would paint anything. I would paint things, you know, like Luke Toymans. Luke Toymans, he does those things of like the architect. That painting is incredible. You know, of, was that Albert Speer, like skiing. And, you know, like Gerhard Richter. Does all those like super, super hard subjects, but they, you know, I'm not gonna lie, they make them so beautiful. I'm scared to do that kind of stuff because they do it also so well. I wouldn't paint brown, ugly things. I wouldn't paint that object things. That doesn't interest me so much. But maybe I will. I don't know. I don't rule out anything.
Sure. I mean, these movie stills, they come to you. Like coincidentally, or do you really look for it?
I look for it. I look for like, I go and like, you know, okay, I'm going to watch like 50s, 70s French crime films.
Okay, but not contemporary, not like Triangle of Sadness. Because that's
I watched that. That was a nice movie. It's kind of maybe why I don't paint like people who's too close to me. Maybe it's too close.
Too contemporary too.
Too contemporary maybe.
Like, it has to have that not.
It has to have maybe lasted. It maybe, you know, it has to have. Not, you know, if like, you can still find works of art from a long time ago, and I mean, these films aren't so old, but if they survive, that means there's something, there's something in them. So Triangle of Sadness was a good, you know, before you mentioned it, I didn't think about it again, but maybe it's
pretty much the French, no? It's like the...
Yeah, because maybe it's so exotic to me. They, you know, I'm really jealous. They have such a, like... You know, I always tell them, like, you know, you don't know how good you have it. They really kind of have, like, a good life. They know how to live much more than how I grew up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We had, like, you know, cottage cheese, white cheese, cucumber, and a tomato. That's, like, all we had growing up. And they have, like, you know, 1,000 cheeses and that. And, you know, it's very, like, exotic to me. I'm a little jealous of it.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, you spend half the time in Marseille, no?
Yeah, now, like, 40%, you know?
Yeah. Great. Thank you for taking us on your...
Thank you.
How you see the world and how you find the images and how you conservate feelings and views for us so we can co-enjoy them with you.
Thank you.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.